Hello, everyone. Patrick McFarlane here, coming at you with another episode of the Liberty Bigley podcast. Been on a bit of a roll lately, and just want to thank you guys all for staying the course with me and listening to Liberty Bigley. I want to encourage you to share Liberty Bigley and subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. Today, I wanted to talk about the famous, I already talked about the Hunter Biden story yesterday. However, I've been listening to a bit more of Tim Pool talk about it and trying to wrap my head around it, because the ancillary story to this is that Twitter and Facebook and other big tech companies have been doing their damnedest, along with the, I believe, CIA-controlled Washington Post, to suppress the spread of the Hunter Biden New York Post story. And Tim Pool and other people are saying that this is the perfect idea or the impetus, since this is such an egregious and such an egregious abuse of power that, I guess in a way, it's unprecedented because the degree of it has not happened before, is that in a presidential campaign, there are major media outlets that are suppressing stories against one of the parties running for election, one of the candidates. And Tim Pool and others have used this to beat the government regulation war drums, that government needs to come in and take over and regulate social media platforms. And I don't know if it's 280 is the protections that social media companies enjoy underneath the certain, maybe I should have looked into this a bit more, and I apologize, but my point stands is that I don't know how we are supposed to expect the government to come in and regulate social media companies and have it be biased or unbiased. And I think that it's, you know, sometimes I wonder if Tim Pool has ever had anyone competently explain anarcho-capitalism to him. And I know that he's hung out with Luke Rudowski of We Are Change, but I just don't, you know, I don't know if he's hung out with Jason Burmess, because I think Jason Burmess is also an ANCAP. But I don't understand how Tim Pool can, in all respect to Tim Pool, I really respect his work and what he's been able to do, but I just don't understand where the disconnect is with him, where he can rail all day long about the fact that there's no such thing as objective journalism, but yet he thinks that the government is an objective, neutral third party that can step in and provide, you know, first off, social welfare programs, because he's a social liberal. He would say, I'm not a classical liberal, I'm a social liberal. So he's kind of like a libertarian on certain things. He understands that side of it, but I just don't understand what the disconnect is. Him thinking, of course, there's no such thing as objective journalism, but there is such thing as objective interests in terms of having a neutral third party that can step in and regulate industries. He knows as well as anyone that candidates are owned by big tech companies, especially, I'm sure Andrew Yang is. I'm sure that Kamala Harris is. What's her face? That Hispanic Ocasio-Cortez. Sorry, AOC. I'm sure she's owned by big tech companies. So I really don't understand why Tim Pool thinks that you could have the government step in to regulate big tech companies when most of the candidates in government are owned by big tech companies. Just doesn't really make sense to me. So anyways, I don't know exactly what the libertarian solution is here. And I think that it's interesting that you have documentaries like The Social Network come out on Netflix, where Facebook executives are coming forward and talking about, you know, how they Facebook hacked people's psychology and got us all addicted to dopamine hits and purposely made it so that clickbait headlines, that rage bait stuff becomes the most rewarded content that gets the most views, and in the algorithm is rewarded the most. But I think that controversy is just what people are naturally attracted to. And although I agree that social media is not good for your life, that it's not good for your mental health, but I don't know what the libertarian alternative is. I don't know if it's necessarily in these competing tech social media platforms like Parler and Library and BitChute and MeWe and all these different Gab, all these different platforms. I don't know if that's the solution. I wonder if Facebook and Twitter and Instagram success is in part due to the fact that the economy is regulated, that the social media and big tech is regulated, and that makes the barrier to entry higher for smaller social media platforms. I really don't know enough about it. I would suspect that's the case. I bet you Facebook and Twitter, I bet you they get big contracts from the government. I'm pretty sure that Facebook has for certain projects. In fact, you know, I think James Corbett has done some work on how Fedbook, like Facebook, was started with seed money from, I don't know, the CIA or some other alphabet soup organization. But it occurred to me that this situation that we have with the Hunter Biden story and Twitter and Facebook and them all censoring it, I really wonder now with the Republican reaction that they've subpoenaed Jack Dorsey for blocking Donald Trump's 2020 campaign Twitter account, or suspending it or freezing it or something. It wasn't clear because when I went on it to view the Donald Trump 2020 campaign Twitter account, it didn't seem to me like it was blocked or frozen or anything like that. But it occurred to me that this could be a catalyst event, and in the way that a false flag is something that's supposed to catalyze a war, I wonder if this is the event that will finally break the camel's back and cause the government to come in and fully take over and regulate social media. And I don't think that that's a good thing. That's not the solution. The solution might be for the government to lower the barrier of entry to these smaller social media platform sites. But, you know, it's not that satisfying of an answer, I don't think. Maybe people are going to have to vote with their feet and leave these big tech platforms, and I've seen more and more of that. However, you know, some platforms are more viable than others. Like, I know BitChute has been growing a lot, and I know that Tarl Warwick, or Styx Hexenhammer, he has been on BitChute and has... There's some other major platforms that have been on there and have been pretty successful. I think Stefan Molyneux was on there on BitChute, but there's a couple other pretty big ones. I think they might be in the intellectual dark web. So I know that it's been growing and the funding has been going up. So, and my show is the Liberty Weekly podcast is on there, and I think I have like 500 and something subscribers on there. So just got to make sure that I keep posting my Liberty Weekly episodes on BitChute and not let it be really a secondary platform, because it gets a fair amount of views, you know. So I think that rival my YouTube views, really. I think I have like 800 YouTube subscribers, but each video will get under maybe like between 50 and 100 views. So really, it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't even really pay for me to spend time on video episodes because this is something that's always kind of been disappointing for me, is that it's been harder to gain traction on YouTube than it has on my podcast. Because, well, on one level, I think the major success jump that I had was when I was able to get on the Libertarian Institute podcast feed. So if I load the Liberty Weekly podcast into the Libertarian Institute feed, I get maybe 700 additional downloads per episode. Whereas before I got on the Libertarian Institute, my show was only getting 300 or 400 downloads per episode. And I mean, that's a good boost, but I guess it's kind of taboo for podcasters to actually directly quote their download numbers. Most people don't do that on their show, but I've always been transparent about it. Whereas, like, I mean, my best Liberty Weekly episode has gotten close to 3,000 downloads, and let's see, average is maybe 1,400 now, which is good. You know, it's really nice. I'm glad that people listen to my show. But in the grand scheme of things, it seems like it's pretty small potatoes compared to maybe your Tom Woods or Dave Smith even. But even the titans of our podcast niche, probably Tom Woods or Dave Smith, I would guess. I'm sure they don't get, I don't know, they might get like 100,000 downloads per episode, maybe 200,000. Whereas, you know, I think your average Joe Rogan episode gets 6 million, maybe more than that. And I think regular, like pretty popular podcasts get a couple million downloads per episode. So everything in perspective. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, another development that that was popping around my mind was that Spotify is going to be taking over the podcast market. I really feel that way. Things have really transitioned away from iPod, or like, you know, iTunes, where podcasts came from, you know, the iPods, of course. And Spotify has launched this thing where you can, because Spotify is a music broadcaster, if your listeners listen to a podcast on the Spotify app, then you can have a podcast that includes any music that's also on Spotify. So you don't have to worry about copyright strikes, is my understanding. So if you wanted to do like an in-depth podcast, or if you wanted to have a podcast that had actual like theme music that was on Spotify, you can do that, is my understanding. And I thought about switching over Liberty Weekly because you have the built-in advertisements, and they will pay you for it. And you also have, you know, it's free. There's no upload limit. With a lot of podcasts, you have upload bandwidth limits. So some of them, they'll limit the number of listeners that they will broadcast your podcast to, and some of them limit the amount of memory that you can upload. I think that's like SoundCloud will do that, but there's other ones that do that too. But like Anchor is completely free, like unlimited listeners at one time and unlimited memory that you can upload. Whereas my Libsyn plan has an upload limit of like 400 megabytes per month of bandwidth that I can upload. And then after the month is up, that content will archive and it will be available forever. And then it rolls over and I can upload up to 400 megabytes again for the next month. And that plan is like, you know, $20 a month, which is, you know, on top of all the other expenses and subscriptions that you have, I mean, it's not significant, but it's nothing to shake a stick at. It's something, you know, but then again, it's pretty low overhead. But Then again, if you have a podcast on Anchor, the overhead is pretty, I mean, it's there is none at all. You just download the app and put it on your phone. So my whole point with this is not to plug Anchor again, but my point is that it seems to me like Spotify and Anchor is going to take over the podcasting world. They're really, I mean, very smart moves. There's no other, it's kind of a game changer that you can have Spotify integrated with it where you wouldn't have to worry about getting copyright strikes or anything like that. So, and it's interesting to me though, because if Spotify becomes a giant and is able to kind of monopolize the market, they have Joe Rogan on it, but it seems like they're going to try their damnedest to censor him or at least control his thought. So if we have things moving in the direction where Spotify is going to be cornering the market, then, you know, there's another, that's a danger. It's dangerous to this pamphleteering idea that I've been promoting about how everyone should have their own podcast. So, well, let's cut a deal. If any of you guys want to start a podcast on Anchor, I would encourage you to do that. And then I will send me a message, because through the Anchor app, you can leave me voicemails for the Liberty Bigley podcast. And if you start a podcast and start it and do it on Anchor, then why don't you either send me a voice message and I'll include it in one of the Bigley, Liberty Bigley episodes, or there's even a way that we can coordinate through the app. And I haven't tried it yet, but we could try and coordinate a time to chat and put that on the Liberty Bigley podcast. So pretty cool. But please subscribe, rate, review, share this show. Really appreciate that. And there's some voicemail. Some people have done it. Actually, it was Nick Pacone of Sounds Like Liberty and Free Markets Green Earth who was had left me a message, and I never put it in a Liberty Bigley episode, but I see that it's there. But we talk pretty often, so he knows. But anyways, we're going to try, my wife and I, with our Unhallowed podcast. We have our weekly episode is going to be coming out either tomorrow or Friday, or excuse me, Friday or Saturday. And we're talking about The Hellbound Heart, which is Hellraiser. It's Clive Barker's Hellraiser. And we're talking about the story. We're going to talk about the movie, and we're going to have Nick Pacone on to talk about it. So I think Nick listens to this podcast. So we're pretty excited to record, bud, and looking forward to that. So thanks everybody for listening again. Tell me what you think. If you want, email me at patrick.mcfarlane@libertyweekly.net. Tell me what you think about big tech and whether this is the false flag censorship event, or tell me if you think that regulating social media companies for free speech is the way to go. Thanks.